I mean, it's been 10 years. I mean, it was 10 years this past May 26th. And you want to keep hope, but that hope continues to fade. I mean, there's still a light in my heart that we're gonna find her, but I don't feel as good as I used to in the past. I mean, it's just at times I feel it's a cold case, and then all of a sudden two or three tips come in, and everything starts all over again, and it's like riding a roller coaster. So I mean, my hopes, as I said earlier, is that we find her and bring her home and give her a proper resting place. And I pray that, God willing, that day will come before I pass.
Today, we're heading back to Orlando, and we're going to spend some time in some of the same places that we did during the Jennifer Kesey investigation in season one. We started looking into the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio, a person that we've actually mentioned on this show before. Some aspects of Tracy's disappearance, on the surface at least, seem pretty cut and dry. And even though the person most believe is responsible for Tracy's disappearance has been named by police, and is also currently sitting in jail, they haven't been held responsible for Tracy's disappearance. And even more importantly, Tracy has never been found. And so that's the question that we're going to ask. What exactly happened to 27-year-old Tracy Ocasio? And where is she? Welcome to the return of Unconcluded. I'm Sean Gerd. So, where is Tracy Ocasio? For her family, that's the question that's consumed them for a decade. And for us, we're going to spend 3 months looking into it. And truth be told, I think we always expected to look into Tracy's disappearance. And for much of the last 2+ years, we've done so casually anyways, as we found ourselves in those same locations that surround her disappearance. But we formally start today with the first of 3 planned episodes. Today we're going to dive into what's known about the events of May 26th, May 27th, and beyond back in 2009, the night that Tracy Ocasio vanished after leaving an Orlando bar, and what's happened since. We're going to see if we can put together all of the existing pieces of the puzzle so far, and look towards that final piece, finding Tracy. Tracy Ocasio spent the evening of Tuesday, May 26th, 2009, at the Florida Tap Room, a bar she often frequented. It's nestled among a Chinese place, a dentist, a dry cleaner. It's in the middle of a nondescript strip mall shopping center on Raleigh Street in the Metro West Master Plan community, just southwest of downtown Orlando. Tracy was at the Florida Tap Room to watch the Orlando's NBA team, the Magic, take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in a playoff game. She spent the evening hanging out with friends, having a few drinks, and cheering on her favorite team. And if you've ever watched a sporting event at a bar, I'm sure you can imagine the atmosphere of the place. After the Magic completed their 2-point overtime victory over the Cavaliers, it was getting pretty late, and Tracy was seen leaving the Metro West bar wearing a dark hoodie sweatshirt, a black tank top, jeans, boots, and a baseball cap. It was late enough that it was basically the early morning hours of May 27th. And since that point, she hasn't been seen. Sometime around 7 a.m. the morning of May 27, 2009, Tracy's car, a 2005 yellow Chevy Cobalt LS, was first seen roughly 7 miles from the Taproom bar. It was parked in a yard on Franklin Street in Ocoee, a town of roughly 35,000 that's just outside Orlando. But no one that knew Tracy would be aware of this until later that night. Now, around the same time that her car is being noticed by those neighbors on Franklin Street, Tracy's mom is waking up and wondering why Tracy isn't at home. She sends a text to Tracy's phone, but hears nothing back. And listen, Tracy's an adult. Her not being home wasn't completely out of the ordinary. She could have stayed with a friend, maybe she had too much to drink at the bar. It really wasn't a cause for concern. But you can imagine, as the follow-up calls and texts throughout the day continued to go unanswered, that concern would start to grow. And this would lead to calls to Tracy's friends, all of whom don't know where she is, and calls to hospitals along the way. Worry has set in. By 7 p.m. that evening, some 12 hours later, the police call looking for Tracy. They want her to move her car off of the property on Franklin Street. Tracy's mom is now aware of where Tracy's car is and heads to that location, not only to move the car, but to see if there's any sign of her daughter. Upon arriving at the car, she notices that the front seats have been pushed all the way forward, needing to be moved back to even drive the car. And it's just around this time, Tracy is first reported missing, and investigators immediately start looking for her. This leads them to the last place that she was known to be, the Florida Tap Room. Employees recall seeing her the previous night, and investigators have a chance to look at the surveillance video from the bar, and they get their first break. Tracy is shown leaving the bar with a man. He has a shaved head, he's wearing jeans, a graphic shirt, he has a gold chain on. And it turns out that he's pretty well known to the local law enforcement. They quickly identify him as James Virgil Hathaway.
She had gone with a couple of girlfriends to see a Orlando Magic playoff game.
I had a chance to talk with Joe Ocasio, Tracy's dad.
Unfortunately, that night, her girlfriends couldn't stay late. The game went into overtime. There was a man that they had seen and met a couple times there. And he befriended them, he overheard the fact that they were leaving, that couldn't stay. And he asked her to where she lived. And she said, Ocoee. He said, I live in Ocoee as well. Can you give me a ride? And that game went into overtime. She stayed with him, and we never saw her after that.
Now, some pieces of the puzzle are being put together. See, from where Tracy's car was found on Franklin Street, it's just a few miles to her home that she shares with her parents, but it's not anywhere that she would have been expected to be. But with this new information about this guy that she left the bar with, well, it's making a lot more sense. See, the location of James Hathaway's house is on a little residential one-way road that winds through a wooded area of kind of decrepit homes. It's named Lyle Street. And Lyle Street ends at West Oakland Avenue, but where it begins, well, that's on Franklin Street. The same street that Tracy's car has been parked on since that morning. Even more, Hathaway's house is only a matter of yards from the location of that car. Roughly 500 yards, or just over a quarter of a mile. A short, less than 5-minute walk away.
Yeah, it was down Franklin Street in Ocoee, over by the railroad tracks, and this property is in a wooded area, and it was pushed over into the woods. When the people that lived there saw it, called the police. You know, at the time we were looking for our daughter, we had not reported her missing at the time. It was in the morning. My wife was calling friends, hospitals. You know, we were just at that point we were just thinking that she might be somewhere. When she got the call about the car, that changed everything. Then I knew there was something wrong. You know, one mistake that we made was, you know, my wife went over before she spoke to me and picked up the car and brought it home. You know, when she called me and told me what happened, I went bananas. And I'm there like, no, you got to call the cops. We got to let her know that we've been looking for her and that she disappeared. It's not normal, the circumstances. And then they came over and got the car, and they had it ever since.
So predictably, investigators, they turn their attention to Hathaway. They first interview him on Wednesday the 27th, and then a couple days later on Friday the 29th. On the 29th, they also give him a polygraph examination, which he fails. According to a June 2009 Orlando Sentinel article, Hathaway told investigators that Tracy had given him a ride home from the bar, where witnesses saw them kissing that night. And when they arrived at his house, he said that she wanted to smoke marijuana with him. He told the police that he showed her the drugs that he had, but she didn't like them and left. At which point, he never saw her again. But his story starts to come into question when the phone records show that Ocasio's cell phone was near Hathaway's home later in the morning on the 28th.
When the police questioned him, he mentioned that he dropped her off on 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and he never saw her after that. Her phone pinged at his house within, I think it was 10 yards from his house at 7 o'clock in the morning. When he was questioned about that, he changed gears and said, well, I actually was told by somebody else not to talk to the police if she disappeared. They questioned him on that. He came up with a name. They went to that person. That person actually was clear. He was actually in some kind of a blowout or a tire and on the turnpike, and they had receipts for the repair and a policeman that had stopped. So that was not him. Then he says, no, he didn't come over to talk to me that morning, the guy that he was accusing, but he called me over the phone. So they pull all their phone records, and that was not accurate as well. There was no conversations between the phone lines he was claiming to be. So at that point, he clamped up, and he said, I don't want to talk anymore, and asked for a lawyer.
So in addition to the already existing issue of her car being parked just down the road and the failed polygraph, investigators also now determine that Tracy and, well, at least Tracy's phone was at his house hours after he said that she left. Investigators are also able to determine that Tracy's phone was turned off and disposed of just after Tracy's mom had attempted to contact her for the first time that morning. Meanwhile, investigators are also starting to process her car.
You know, there was DNA in the car, but we knew that he was supposed to be there because, quote unquote, he gave her a ride. But there was DNA on the driver's side, which he was not supposed to be on, which means that he drove the car. And then when the car was found, the seats were totally, the front seats were totally pushed over and left with the seats down. Meaning there was something or someone that was placed in the back of the seat and it was taken in, or out.
See, the part of town where Hathaway lived and where Tracy's car was found, it's known for being a little shady. And so while Hathaway certainly is a person of interest for police, they continue to entertain other possibilities. Maybe Tracy had run into one of these seedy characters. But by Monday, June 1st, there's enough for law enforcement to execute a search warrant at Hathaway's house and name him a person of interest in Tracy's disappearance. Investigators are looking for anything that relates to Tracy Ocasio. Her clothing, her phone, her keys, her wallet, all of those things are still missing. Anything that can tie her to Hathaway's residence.
Drugs and paraphernalia, they found that there was a computer that had some porn and child porn, but they could not connect it to Hathaway because there was multiple men living there besides his father. I guess there was an uncle and Hathaway, so nothing came out of that. So that's all, the only thing that they were holding him for in the beginning.
So after searching, they find no evidence of Tracy, only some drug paraphernalia, but it's enough reason to arrest him. So as they're booking him into jail, they're continuing to focus their search in the area immediately surrounding her car and Hathaway's home. This includes the use of bloodhounds and cadaver dogs, but unfortunately the bloodhounds and cadaver dogs, they don't pick up any scents. Not Tracy's scent outside of his home or her car, which is parked on Franklin Street. Which leads them to conclude that she hadn't gotten out of her car there. In the end, efforts come up empty. There's just no sign of Tracy. So while these initial searches turn up nothing, and the investigation into Hathaway doesn't yield concrete connections to Tracy's disappearance, other circumstances come to light that turn Hathaway from a person of interest into a bona fide suspect.
He's been involved in several disappearances, just not our daughter. And then during that time, I made contact with several of his ex-girlfriends, acquaintances, and so on and so forth. And there was history of him doing and attacking women in the same manner that he attacked Rachel Clark, which is the one that came forward and ended up putting him in jail for the rest of his life.
A woman named Rachel Clark comes forward after seeing Hathaway's ties to Tracy's disappearance on TV. And she comes forward with something that would make everyone's jaws drop open. About a year earlier, on August 7th, 2008, she'd also given Hathaway a ride home from the bar. And as they'd pulled into park, he'd grabbed her and began to choke her inside the car. She was somehow able to get away and run from the vehicle. Hathaway gave chase. He grabbed her, he started choking her and slamming her head against the curb. and he was screaming, "Don't make me kill you, don't make me kill you." Others in the neighborhood heard the commotion and came running out. Thankfully, this would scare Hathaway away. At the time, police were unable to locate him. But Rachel, she would remember his face. And when she saw him on TV after he was arrested after Tracy's disappearance, she knew that was the man who had attacked her. The similarities in the attack of Rachel and the circumstances of Tracy's disappearance all but confirmed that police were looking at the right guy. And it also signaled a grim fate for Tracy.
Yeah, when that happened, we got a phone call. When it first happened, we were looking for her. We printed a bunch of flyers, and you know, I was naive. I never knew this the consequences, but I put my phone number, personal phone number, on the flyers, and they were all over town. So we get a phone call, and it happened to be the mother of Rachel Clark, and she's telling us that he had attacked her daughter, and it happened back in Castleberry, and nothing had come out of it. And she wanted to meet us at the Ocoee police station because she wanted to tell the Ocoee police what happened then. So we met with her, and I forget if it was a day or two after, but it was, I think 24, 48 hours, you know, I think it's probably the day after, shortly after everything was on the news. So we met with them there. And, I remember Rachel, excuse me. I remember Rachel just looking at me and saying, I'm afraid that something happened to her. And you know, I didn't want to think that anything happened to her at that point. But then when I started listening to her story, telling to the police, it started to sink in that maybe my daughter was no longer alive. So from there, you know, it kind of blew up in the media. There was some pressure on the Castleberry area and that county. And also when they found the paperwork for her case, they claimed that they had mailed stuff to her and she never got it. She had moved. And when she got attacked, Rachel was actually in the hospital. There were pictures of her all beaten up with braces holding her neck and stuff like that. So it was not just a passing thing. There was witnesses that were there. So all that came out during the trial. But thanks to her, you know, he's behind jail, behind bars.
With new charges for the attack on Rachel Clark in nearby Seminole County, Hathaway is moved from Ocoee to face the more serious charges, among them, attempted murder. Police later learn of Hathaway's possible connections to the disappearance of a man named Christopher George as well. His bones are found in Lake Carter, which is off the eastern side of Ocoee-Apopka Road, between West Keene Road and South Binion Road. And although the police ultimately blamed his death on the influence of drugs leading to him drowning in the lake, Hathaway was allegedly tied to the cleaning, presumably of drug remnants, of the vehicle that Chris George was in just before he disappeared, and then moving that vehicle back to an area near the woods. Additionally, a police officer stopped him and another man as they were coming out of those woods. So while the Christopher George disappearance and death was not tied to him, that violent attack and two missing persons, it was too much of a coincidence to ignore. Back in Ocoee, police continue to process tips and search for the missing 27-year-old. So while officers on foot and horseback search wooded areas, divers equipped with sonar search nearby lakes. One particular tip comes in about a month after Tracy is reported missing that involves her yellow Chevy Cobalt, possibly seen the morning of her disappearance, parked facing the wrong direction, north, but on the southbound side, with its headlights on a road that's adjacent to Lake Apopka. The road, South Binion, follows a north-south route along the eastern bank of Lake Apopka and continues north over Florida 414 Highway. And all along this road is swampy woodland right up against the eastern shore of the lake, including Magnolia Park, which is an Ord County park known for its trails and water views. Police spend hours searching the area, but as with all the others, they find nothing. That's until a black boot turns up during what was originally a news report called an Orange County Sheriff's horseback training exercise, but ultimately was a known debris dumping area for James Hathaway and likely a planned search. The boot, which was the same size that Tracy wore, was found near State Road 50 and Blueford Avenue, in an area that had previously been searched. The boot is then shown to Tracy's friends and family, and it leads them to believe that it definitely could be Tracy's. This is one of the things that I talked to Joe Ocasio about. What about the boot that was found? Was there other, any more information as far as that? Has that been determined to be hers, or just a strong possibility?
We believe it's strong. It was hers. When she was crazy about shoes, and she just always left the labels, original labels on the bottom of the shoes. And her and her girlfriend used to share shoes. You know, so her girlfriend swore by that it was hers. And when we saw it, we thought it was the same. There was not enough DNA in it or sweat for them to determine 100%, but we know that it was hers. My personal thought has always been that something happened in that area, because that's an area where he really hung out with people, and it's not too far from where where her car was found. And maybe something happened there, and from there he took her somewhere else. That's always been my thinking.
Was the boot found by one of the lakes, or was that in a completely different location?
No, it was in the lake area, but not on the lake. It was actually on the ground near the cemetery area, and it was found by Orange County Mounted Sheriff.
Have they done recent DNA analysis, or has anything changed as far as the capabilities of that? I think I read somewhere that it was inconclusive. I didn't know if they had kept that and planned to redo it at some point.
You know what? I do. No, they have not, because back then they didn't have enough. There was not even enough for them to test it, even under the old ways of testing DNA.
Okay.
And even if they test and it was hers, I'm not sure that it changes the dynamics of where they stand with the case.
Searches of numerous lakes, countless wooded areas, abandoned animal shelters, septic tanks, swamps, and other sites have continued to come up empty.
Yeah. Gosh, we've done so many searches. The two that you're talking about, one was by Lake Apopka, where her car was supposedly seen in that area. We've probably been to that area four or five different times with different groups and with the police, with no luck on the search. It was an area that he was known to have frequented quite a bit, there's been several bodies found in that area afterwards that, and one in particular was a female that we thought it was her at one point, and it turned out not to be. And then the other lake was Lake Bennett over in Ocoee, which there's a gas station there now. Before it used to be just a field with a cemetery behind, and kids and people used to hang out in that area in the back of that lake. And that lake, we went there with divers, scanners, sonars, and so on, with no luck either.
Are searches still ongoing? Has there been any recently, or has it been a while?
We get tips off and on, and the last search was done, probably about 4 months ago. There was a search done at a local cemetery here where a witness has seen a group of men burying something 2 days after she disappeared in that area. The people kept staring at her and followed her. She got scared, took off, and then she reported it years later. So we went there with sonar. We found that there was something underneath. So they dug, and it happened to be that it was somebody working on a sprinkler system, and they buried some pipes and pieces of wood. So that's the last time we had a search done.
But even just this week, more tips and search locations have made their way to investigators. And for Joe and Tracy's family, they continue to search.
Well, when we don't have a body, the chances of proving it beyond a reasonable doubt, there's a chance that we can't. If he gets off after that, then we could never be able to charge him. And the fact that he's already in jail for life, I feel comfortable that I didn't want to take that step unless we have a stronger case.
So James Hadaway sits in a prison cell, most likely responsible for Tracy's disappearance. Her family's convinced of that.
No, we know, number one, he's admitted to all the people that he has. I mean, he plays games with our family, but telling us to inmates where he's placed or in different places. As a matter of fact, we had a tip last Thursday that is being looked into from another inmate that he mentioned where he put her. And then the evidence in the very beginning.
And after doing our initial research, I think we'd have to agree. So while some of the pieces are in place, the puzzle is far from complete. A daughter, a sister, and a friend, and only some of the answers.
She was a fun-loving, caring person. I mean, she would walk into a room and light up the room. I remember when she was a little girl, and we went to the beach, and she was probably 5 years old. We had just moved down to South Florida, and we set the towels down and all that, and she goes, I'm going to go over and talk to my friends. And they're like, you don't have friends here. She says, oh, I will. They will make friends with me. You know, and she grabbed my arm, and we walked over there, and she, little girl, she said, my name's Tracy. And she became friends with the kids. And that's how she was as an adult as well. She was very outgoing, you know, and caring. She loved animals, and we miss her a lot.
And as we started wrapping our heads around Tracy's disappearance, a case that prior to running across it during our search for Jennifer Kessie, we were unaware of, Scott and I had to talk through some of the things that we were learning. It's pretty obvious that as far as who's responsible, we probably know who that is, right? And thankfully he's already in jail. But outside of that, what exactly happened? Where did it happen? And where is Tracy? Those questions are still out there 10 years later. And so I think that's kind of where we are right now is those questions still need to be answered.
Yeah, those are the questions that are still lingering and that are still hanging out there. And that's what's giving the family, you know, so much grief, obviously, after all these years, because I think that they know as well. And as you said, at least he's in jail, at least he's in prison, and he's going to be there for the rest of his life, thank God. And he's not able to do this to anybody else. But there's a lot of questions still to be answered. And I think those are some things that, you know, one of the reasons that we're sort of looking into this to see what we can figure out or what we, you know, answers that we can try and dig up. And there's a lot of them still. You know, we may sometimes, you know, the answer, but you don't know how to get to the answer. And I think that's where we're at right now is we're pretty clear on what we believe the answer to this is as far as who did it. Everything else is sort of hanging out there. And so hopefully we can you know, make some headway as far as that goes.
What reasons do you think that we have as far as why she hasn't been found yet? They've searched so many different locations. They've looked certainly at places where Hadaway was known to have worked or have, you know, done things, but she's still missing. Is it just a matter of, I mean, it's just got to be they haven't looked in the right spot yet, right? I mean, this is the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Orlando, as you know, we've been there hundreds of times. There are so many nooks and crannies in Orlando. There's so many people. There's so many different areas. There's wooded areas. There's lakes. There's sewage areas. There's vacant lots. There's so much. There's so many places. And I think that's the issue right now. And, you know, they've searched areas that James Hadaway was familiar with and places that he had gone, but he could have gotten out of character that night and or that next day and you know, went someplace completely different. You know, it's hard to fathom that they haven't found her yet, considering all the places that they've checked. But in my mind right now, I just believe that they need to find the right area. And I know that sounds awfully simplistic, but to me, that is the most probable answer right now, is they just haven't looked in the right spot, unfortunately.
Well, and even though we pretty much, and most people assume, and I mean, police too, they've named him the suspect, that Hadaway is responsible. Do we think that he was responsible on his own, or that there may be some other people involved, or maybe even that just some other people who might know what have happened, even if he kind of carried out whatever he did on his own?
As of right now, I think that he probably did this alone. I don't see anything right now that would indicate to me that somebody did it with him. And typically when there's multiple people involved, you know, you'd like to think somebody rolls over at some point. If we see something that tells us otherwise, I think it would probably be a good thing. The fact that it may just be James Hathaway is going to be a heck of a lot harder to get answers when it's one person. I don't see any indicators that it was anybody besides him. He was a big, strong guy, and unfortunately, I think he could have probably overpowered Tracy. And to me, right now, that appears what happened. And then he did what he did, and hopefully we will know, and hopefully the family will know. But as of right now, I think he probably did it by himself.
You know, one thing that was kind of bothering me a little bit, and maybe bothering is not the right word, but where her car was found, I looked at it again, and a lot of the things that I had read said it was 150 yards or something. I kind of looked at where her car was found and where he lived, and it was a little bit farther. I think it was closer to 500 yards, which is just over about a quarter of a mile. And here's my thoughts with that. Why, if we make the assumption that he drove her car, which a lot of the things that we've seen kind of allude to that, why would he park it so close to his house? When he probably is it just the convenience of being able to walk home after he leaves it there? I don't know. There's something about where that car was found that kind of bugs me and doesn't necessarily make sense. And I think that it's important because I think that's part of that car is probably the biggest piece of evidence as far as trying to figure out where Tracy is now.
Absolutely. And I've thought about that a lot too. You know, you think, why would he essentially implicate himself by leaving the car so close to the house? And the only thing I can think was he was drunk. He was taking some sort of drugs. He wasn't thinking clearly. And in his mind, moving it just a little bit away from his house, he could say it wasn't parked at my house. It was down the street. I don't know what happened to her. And in his mind, maybe that made sense to him, even though we're sitting here saying that is ridiculous. It's right, essentially right next to you. A quarter mile may as well be in his driveway as far as this case is concerned. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I think that he probably wasn't thinking clearly. I think to him, it was probably a good idea to move it where he moved it. And, I think that's something that I'd love to be able to ask him if he ever came forward and said something, but I don't know if he was obviously, if it was something that he did and he was being smart, who cares if you have to walk a few miles, you know, but I don't think he was thinking very clearly.
No. And, you know, the other thing too about the car is that we also assume that, you know, unfortunately, Tracy probably didn't make it out of that situation that night. And if that's the case and you know, he's dealing with disposing of a body, using the car, which, you know, they examined the car and there really wasn't evidence of that. It kind of makes it. It's another question that is, you know, what did he do with her? How did he manage that? You know, this is someone that's getting rides around town. So, you know, what access to vehicles did he have? If he's moving the car, I don't know. It seems strange. Especially when we consider that her car was also potentially sighted that night next to kind of like a lake where something could have been going on there, you know, and whether or not that is actually her car or not, you know, who knows? But I struggle with the fact that they didn't find anything in the car as far as evidence of you know, a body or something or any kind of, you know, physical blood or anything like that. And then, you know, the fact that her body's just kind of vanished or she vanished in general, that's one of the things that I'm struggling with. And I think the biggest part of what the whole point of this case at this point is trying to find Tracy. And really the only thing we have is that car and kind of the areas around there that she could be. And it doesn't make sense. And I'm trying to figure out, I guess, and maybe this is just me right now, I'll kind of talk myself into what I'm thinking, but it's just like, what are we missing? Like, what are we missing about between the car, between Hathaway, and between where she is? Because it's just not adding up. There's got to be a missing piece. And I think that missing piece is going to go a long way into trying to figure out, you know, where she is.
Yeah, I think that's been the most frustrating part for me, is because I'm going to probably contradict myself a little bit here, because I just said that he probably wasn't thinking clearly, which is the reason he left the car only 500 yards from the house. But if he wasn't thinking clearly, how is there no evidence? So it's sort of a double-edged sword. That's really what I wrestle with a lot, and why I get frustrated with it, I think, is because on one hand, why did he leave at 500 yards? Okay, well, maybe he wasn't thinking clearly. He thought that was far enough. Okay, well, then how is there no evidence in the car? The seats are both pushed all the way forward, and yet there's nothing there, and there's no Tracy. It just doesn't make a whole ton of sense when you consider both of those two factors. The fact that the car is so close, which would indicate that James Hathaway had something or all to do with this. And then on the other hand, you have literally no physical evidence, or not much physical evidence of any sort, that would directly link him to it. So you're right, there's something in between there, because those two things are connected in some way, and there's something in between there that connects them. And right now, that is something that's missing. And I think if we were able to find that or figure that out, I think the entire thing would probably fall into place.
Yeah. And if we look at kind of, I mean, let's look at what he did to Rachel Clark, right? He was choking her, and, you know, thank God she was able to get away. But, you know, if we think about the process of choking someone, there may not be blood and that kind of stuff. You choke someone, they obviously stop breathing, you know, and any of that kind of stuff would expect to be in the car, right? Tracy's hair and stuff like that's in her own car. Well, of course, that makes sense. So if we say and make the assumption, okay, whatever happened to Tracy is along the lines of what he tried to do to Rachel Clark, let's for a minute say, okay, he choked Tracy, then maybe that explains why there doesn't seem to be any evidence in the car. But that said, the concept of him at that point having a body that he needs to dispose of, that certainly makes it a challenge. And I think along with that, we start thinking about the phone and how the phone's pinging at his house, essentially, the next morning, subsequently turned off after her mom attempts to contact her that morning, which is kind of a red flag in and of itself. But And obviously at this point the phone is still missing as well. And so, you know, if we start to try to look at this from a holistic standpoint and say, okay, well, the disposal of whatever is happening the next morning, but then the car is already sighted at, you know, the house or the yard that it was left in earlier that morning, about the same time that her mom ends up calling her phone, and maybe a little earlier. So, you know, him being able to use that car as a way of disposing of whatever he needs to dispose of certainly seems like it's outside of the time frame that would be possible, considering her car was already where it was found and wasn't moved after that point. So again, we're opening ourselves up to these questions of, was there another vehicle involved? And this is what leads me to believe, is there another person involved? Or is there, you know, not necessarily a person involved in what happened to Tracy, but someone else that knows, you know, what was involved in cleaning up, potentially what happened. And because without the access to the car, and certainly there were some other vehicles at his house and other people lived there, and he could have used those, you know, on his own. But it just, it opens up so many more questions. And the one question we can answer is who's responsible. And there's just so many others that haven't been answered. Each one of those has a component to trying to narrow down where she's going to be.
You know, physical evidence in the back of the car. If he was choking her, from all indicators, she was a very strong-willed woman. And unless she was had been drugged or was so inebriated that she couldn't fight back, I believe she would have fought back. And there would be something. There would have been evidence on him, scratches of some sort or something in the car that would have indicated some sort of a struggle. Even if it wasn't much of a struggle, they're usually able to determine if there was some sort of a struggle. So that's another part that I'm sort of confused with as far as that goes, because the seats are pushed back. So did they get into the back of the car? Whatever happens, happens. Maybe they decide to leave the car at that point, and then everything goes down as far as her going missing. I don't know. That makes more sense to me than a struggle taking place in the car. And also, to your other point of using the car for disposal doesn't make much sense to me either. Like you said, because of the time frame, because of the lack of evidence, there's quite a few things there that, you know, would indicate to me that it doesn't make a lot of sense there. So was there another person involved? I don't know. Right now, I still feel like he probably did this on his own, but it's sort of like with the Jennifer Kessie case. It's sometimes you change your mind 5 minutes after you say something because something else comes up or something else that maybe you've thought about before, but you didn't really think about it in a certain way happens, and you start to connect dots a little bit. And maybe we're going down too many rabbit holes with this stuff, and maybe it's a lot simpler than what we're making it, but it's hard because we do have to fill in a lot of blanks right now. And sometimes when you fill in blanks, you maybe overfill them. And I don't know, the time frame doesn't make sense for that. You're right. As far as the cell phone at the house, that's, you know, another piece of evidence that, and that's why we've settled on the fact that it's James Hathaway, and now trying to find the answers to it. I don't know. This is a tough one as far as trying to connect all these dots.
Yeah. And, you know, putting Tracy's disappearance on James Hathaway is the easiest part, of course. But we keep going back to that because him being responsible means that he's also the key to finding Tracy. Just understanding the thought process of what he did that morning, that early in the morning, that night, whatever you want to call it, is really just what's going to lead to being able to find her. And so if we talk about some of the things that have happened in the years since her disappearance as far as police searches, they've drained lakes, they've searched countless wooded areas, they've searched septic tanks and different things that Hathaway had access to. Part of me wants to say, well, you know, where could she be? But at the same time, I mean, look how big Lake Apopka is. It's huge. I think I read somewhere that's like the fourth largest lake in Florida. The reality is that looking for potentially a body in something so large is a challenge in and of itself. And, you know, of course they try to narrow down the particular areas. How many times do we hear about an area being searched and then it's searched again and they find something? That's just the nature, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's Florida. And as you said, Lake Apopka is massive, and there's lots of other massive lakes that are pretty close. You're talking about, you have Lake Toho that's within driving distance. There's other lakes there that are large, they're full of gators. That's the hardest part, unfortunately, in this whole thing is probably going to be actually finding Tracy. There may be lots of other answers that are come up with, that we come up with, that are discovered along over the years if the police keep moving forward with it. And the one thing, regardless of, even if James Hathaway spills and says, here's where she is, still may not find her. And that's just the nature of Florida, unfortunately. So I don't think that should discourage, obviously, continuing to find her and continuing to search for her. I don't think so at all. But I think it is in the back of your mind how difficult it is. And that's why it's so hard thinking about what her family has gone through and stuff like that. And that's why, you know, with this podcast, somebody hopefully knows something. I keep coming back to the fact that I think James Hathaway did it by himself. I actually hope that is wrong. I hope he did have help, because I think the odds are a lot better of somebody eventually rolling over and saying something, because of everything you just said, the surface area and the place to try to find her just within driving distance of Orlando, and whether he had help or, you know, the Ocoee area, even all of those areas just are full of dense vegetation and lakes, and they've drained some of them. And as you said, they could go back to those lakes and they've done that in the past and found missing people. So I don't know. I hope answers, that we can get some answers and try to figure something out.
Yeah. And I want to go back to a little bit is the boot that was found, which her family and friends think it's probably Tracy's. And so it was a dumping area that James Hathaway was known to have used in the past. The boot obviously was the same size that she wore. It looked similar to the ones that her friends thought she might have been wearing that night. And let's assume for a minute that it is Tracy's boot, which I think we're fairly confident in, but let's just say it's 100% fact that was Tracy's boot. So if her boot is in this particular location, I mean, that's not I mean, that's a pretty good, at least in my opinion, that's pretty telling, right? Like, that's probably a location that needs to be continued searched because she's likely probably there. I mean, what's the likelihood of finding just one article, just the boot, and nothing else being there? I just find that unlikely.
Yeah, that's where I would focus the search. And I know they have a little bit. To me, I agree with you 100% that when you find, there's not a ton of physical evidence in this case. There's some, this being a big piece of it. Same size, same style of boot she wore. Let's be honest, it's probably Tracy's boot. Yeah, focus the search there. Comb that thing as many times as you have to. Maybe he tossed a boot to try to lead the police astray. And that sort of is counterintuitive to the argument I had earlier about him not being clear-headed, but he could have maybe woke up the next morning in a panic, realized he had to do something, and set a plan in motion. He seems, you know, being a guy who is a criminal, he has a criminal mind, and maybe he's able to operate on that level of throwing evidence in one woods and then hiding the rest someplace else, or scattering evidence to try to lead the police off or lead the dogs off. And I would still focus on that area. I think finding physical evidence there, because odds are there's going to be something else, but maybe he's just a criminal mastermind and he was able to throw a boot in there and lead the police astray. That's not likely to me. I guess it's something to consider. Only James Hathaway knows, but yeah, I would focus the efforts there. I would really work that area. I would bring cadaver dogs in there as many times as was necessary to comb that thing as, you know, over and above and beyond what's already been done.
Yeah, and her dad told me something along the lines of, you know, possibly something happening there and then moving Tracy to a different location. And that's certainly possible too. It just seems to me that he's already in a kind of a wooded, secluded area. It just seems more likely that that would be the final location. So let's go back to the beginning of the night before she disappeared real quick. I mean, listen, we've been in these situations before, right? Like, we're watching a sports game in a bar, having some drinks. Does anything stick out to you about her giving a ride to James Hathaway? Does that seem like something that would just be normal, or do you think that that would be something that is abnormal?
You know, on the surface, it seems abnormal that a woman would give a ride home to somebody, but it sounds like maybe that's just the type of person Tracy was. She was a kind person who was sort of up for anything type of a person, and, you know, probably didn't think much of it. Sure, I'll give you a ride home, no problem. Maybe she liked him. Maybe there was some sparks there. I don't know. After a few drinks, it's hard to say sometimes. And you're up at a bar, you're in an atmosphere of a sports game. Like you said, we've been there. We've been in those types of atmospheres. And on the surface, yes, I would think that would be a little bit odd. But if it's a place that she frequented and that he frequented and she saw him up there and was familiar with who he was, but maybe didn't necessarily know his background, she's just being a nice person, giving him a ride home. So, you know, obviously she put herself into a dangerous situation, but she didn't know that. And that wasn't something she could have anticipated. She was just being a nice person. She didn't set herself up for anything at all. It was wrong place at the wrong time, unfortunately. And with a guy who, unbeknownst to her, had a criminal past and sometimes, you know, doing a nice thing can backfire, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think, too, at that point in time, his criminal past was very minor.
Right.
The guy who gets drunk and gets physical kind of thing, you know what I mean? It wasn't anything that would say, oh man, you know, this guy is, I need to fear for my life. I think those things certainly came out after. You know, and the other thing, too, is as I was researching this case and looking into, you know, the newspaper articles and the media, the TV news media that was out at the time of her disappearance, there were a couple mentions of Tracy and Hathaway kind of getting close at the bar. I even read one article that talked about that they were kissing in the bar that night. So I don't know, you know, the accuracy of that information, and certainly it made its way into a newspaper article. But I think that if we assume, obviously, that they were at least familiar with each other from the bars, acquaintances, and then, you know, possibly a little more than that, if they were, what was in the newspaper article is true, then I don't think it's weird at all that she would give him a ride it's one of those things that hey, you're heading home. I need to head home. It might be like sort of on the way. You mind giving me a lift? And it doesn't really seem like a big deal. Also, a lot of the articles talked about her wanting to come back and I guess smoke some marijuana with him or something. I don't know that we can take any truth from that just because that's his side of the story. It's plausible that doing something along those lines of just, hey, let's hang out for a little bit and then I'll go home. So I don't think that is abnormal enough to think anything more than this was just a bad character who unfortunately she had befriended a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I read the same articles with them getting close at the bar, and that stuff. I guess I take with a grain of salt, and that's why I don't like to assume that's exactly what happened, because it's, you know, it's people's memories and trying to you know, remember what happened at a night when everybody was drinking and having a good time, and it could have been somebody else with James. You know, you don't know, so that's why I try to take that with a grain of salt. But it also is potentially pertinent to the case, so it's something to definitely be considered. And you're right, giving them a ride home, no big deal. People give rides home all the time, so I don't think she did anything probably out of character for her. I don't think this was something that was way out of bounds, something that she wouldn't normally have done for somebody else. And you're right, there was no mugshots out there of James Hathaway everywhere saying, stay away from this guy. So, you know, the lights weren't flashing for her, and they shouldn't have been. She was doing something nice, taking somebody home. And yeah, maybe they were going to go, you know, party a little bit at his house or something. Who knows? We don't know that information. We're sort of going on what he's saying. And right now, as far as we're concerned, he's lying about everything else. So why would he be telling the truth about that? So that's hard to swallow for me as well, to believe certain things he's saying when we know he's more than likely 99.9% lying about, you know, what he did with Tracy.
Yeah, for sure. And we talk a little bit too about the fact that she was last seen leaving that bar very early morning hours of the 27th, and what really wasn't reported missing until that night. And I think it's a pretty unfortunate set of circumstances, because, you know, Tracy is an adult at this point. She's living at home, but she's 27 years old, and her not being home isn't really cause for concern. And I'm sure, you know, her mom and her parents probably can't help but be hard on themselves about it, but I put myself in that position, or I think about, you know, when I was coming back home in the summers during college or just after college, you know, there would be times where I would go out and just sleep over at a friend's house or something like that. So to me, that's not strange at all, but it ends up giving potentially Hathaway, assuming he's the one responsible, which we think, a lot of extra time to clean up, quote unquote, clean up. Because the police don't really start looking for her until she's been missing for over 10, 11, 12 hours, possibly more. And so I think that's something that is just so unfortunate, because, you know, had they come looking for her at 7 a.m. that morning when her car's first spotted in that yard, you know, what do they find? It becomes an entirely different investigation at that point. And I'm not sure there's anything to find there. It's just one of those things I keep thinking about. It's like so unfortunate. And you know, we talk about, or when we did the Jennifer Kesey case too, we think about how, in that case, the reason that the search didn't start was for different reasons. More, the investigators didn't want to, even though the parents were pleading. But you know, the end results kind of the same thing, is you're playing catch up a little bit, because you know, you got 10, 12 hours gone, and that in this kind of crime or disappearance or whatever have you, that is so much time to lose, and that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, I see a lot of similarities in that part of it with the Jennifer Kesey case. You know, it's what the police said, not verbatim, but something to the effect of, adults are allowed to be missing. They can go missing. They're allowed to go off on their own, and without any evidence to say there was foul play involved, then as far as the police are concerned, this is not a missing person case. It's an adult who is choosing to not be found right now. Obviously, we know with the Jennifer Kesey case, that was not the case. And with the Tracy Ocasio situation, that wasn't the case either. But you're right, that does set behind investigations. There's a reason there's a TV show called The First 48. The first 48 hours are the most important time in trying to find, to either solve a crime or find a missing person. And when it is an adult, and if the police don't walk up essentially to a crime scene, they aren't going to, in their mind, have anything to investigate. So when there is nothing, and until they found, you know, Tracy's car and all that kind of stuff, and were able to really get it moving, same thing with Jennifer Kessie, until the parents finally were able to convince them and they, you know, were able to get the ball rolling a little bit, by that time it could be too late. And it's really unfortunate, but it is, though, it's a pretty standard procedure with the way police operate, and it does hurt some of these cases because adults are allowed to be missing. As you said, you're allowed to go out as an adult, and if you want to spend the night at somebody's house and hang out there all day and not contact anybody, that's not against the law. It did set things back a little bit, and it is unfortunate, but it seems to be pretty standard.
I keep thinking about the time of her disappearance, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, and wherever she is now, and we continue, obviously, you know, I continue to make the assumption that she probably didn't make it, just based on Hathaway's history with, you know, the other situations that he found him in, himself in. And one of the things I keep thinking about is, I keep thinking about the time frame of her disappearance, which is, you know, we're looking at somewhere between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. likely, where she is unaccounted for, or in her car as well. I mean, I guess she's not accounted for at 7 a.m., but her car is parked at some point during that time. So we can kind of start to narrow down when something probably likely happened. And then even after that, the phone situation, and I mean, what sticks out to you about that? The thing that keeps running through my mind is that, you know, something happened shortly after driving him home, and whatever that may have been, he, you know, disposed of her body or what have you, and maybe the phone rings and he realizes that he still has it, or is he still disposing of her and her materials that late in the morning? I mean, seems like a lot of time for something to happen and then just kind of hang out with potentially, you know, a dead body just kind of sitting at your house or whatever. So I still don't know what to make of that. I think that's so hard in narrowing down that time frame, because that time frame, it can start to let us make connections to the other things that we do know, like the car being sighted and that other stuff. And I think the time frame also really is going to help narrow down possible locations.
Yeah, I think that's probably the key to the whole thing. And the fact that the phone pings at 7 a.m. at his house. And I think you're probably right. I think the mother called. He said, oh my gosh, her phone's still on. There's her phone. And he got rid of it at that point, smashed it or did whatever he did to it. But that's a piece of evidence. That's something to go on, and that's a place to start as far as things go. And then you start to match up the car being seen, and, you know, it at least has the ability to move itself forward. If we didn't have any of that, I think it would be a heck of a lot harder to try to place anything. So yeah, I think that's a good place to start. That's almost, for me, where, yes, the timeline starts with, you know, between 2 and 7 is where this probably happened. But for me, 7 o'clock, if we're trying to find out what happened to Tracy and where Tracy is, I think that's a really good place to start.
Yeah, I think that's where we do start. I think in moving forward with this case is, you know, we can take some assumptions for what they're worth. And I think considering that James Hathaway is responsible is something that it's hard to not. And I think that at this point we have to assume that he's responsible based on all of the evidence that exists. And so in moving forward, what are we looking at? I think we're looking at, like you said, A, the timeline, B, and I guess this is still part of the timeline, but as part of that timeline, what were the options for where Tracy could be? And based on tips and other searches and all of those things, where do we go from there? I think that's where we go. I think that we go to Orlando, and I think that we start looking at some of these places and just trying to make them make sense in our own head. And I don't think that we are going to be able to do anything that the police, you know, haven't been able to do. And by all accounts, that, you know, and especially in talking to Tracy's family, I think the police have done a really good job in trying to narrow this down as much as they can. But I don't think that there's anything that can make up for actually seeing these places and actually seeing the distance between, you know, certain aspects of the car and Hathaway's house and the lakes that have been searched and the certain locations that the tips have come on and where the boot was found and the different paths and trails that lead to those places. I think that's where we go. And I think that that's how we move this forward as far as what we're doing is just try to make a little bit more sense of that and see if that can help ring some bells for people. You know, maybe there's an area where someone saw something, but it wasn't an area that was considered to be part of this. And I think that that's where this case moves forward is another tip that comes in or someone remembers something or realizes, you know what, it's been 10 years. It's time to say something. The places have been searched and the person responsible is in jail. But those questions that are out there have to be answered somehow. And I think that there's certainly more information to be found. And hopefully that's something that can happen.
Yeah, I think for now we've done what we can online. I know there's more information out there. I think we've used the internet to find what we can. We've spoken to the father. So I think the next step is putting our shoes on and heading out to those spots and trying to find some things for ourselves and getting our eyes on it and then trying to link everything together, starting at that 7 a.m. spot and then going from there. I completely agree, and I think that's what we need to do. There's nothing like actually seeing it as we know with the Jennifer Kessie case and how many times we were in Ocoee and in Orlando and at all those different sites, too many times to count. I think that's something that we've got to do with this case as well.
Tracy Ocasio, her keys, wallet, and Verizon LG Voyager cell phone have never been found. At the time of her disappearance, Tracy was 27 years old. She had brown hair, brown eyes, was 5'5", and weighed about 120 pounds. And while it appears the person responsible for her disappearance is serving a life sentence behind bars, after being convicted for his attack on Rachel Clark, the sad reality is that Tracy's case is far from over. If you know anything about the disappearance of Tracy Ocasio, you have any information that may be able to further implicate the suspect in this case, or you saw anything the night of May 26, morning of May 27, 2009, in or around Ocoee, Florida, please come forward. You can call the Ocoee Police Department at 407-905-3160. So where is Tracy Ocasio? And is there anyone out there that knows what happened to Tracy other than James Hathaway? That's where we're going to pick up next time on Unconcluded. As always, thank you for listening and participating. This show is nothing without all of you. Scott and I are glad to be back after such a long time away, and thank you for sticking with us. If you'd like to support the show, the single best way that you can do that is just by subscribing and rating 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, or you can do it on any other podcast player. We also still have our Patreon, which we are committing to use for investigative costs during our upcoming seasons. If you want to check that out, you can just search the podcast on patreon.com. Also, don't forget to check us out on Facebook. We have our regular Facebook page, Unconcluded Podcasts, but there's also a fan-run podcast discussion page. I believe it's called Unconcluded Podcast Discussion. And on that page, that's where you'll find tons of discussion on Jennifer Kessie and soon Tracy Ocasio. I'm also going to put some pictures showing some of the places that we talked about in this episode on that page later today. Also, before I go, I want to address the season 2 issue, the investigation of Tiffany Daniels. We did one episode and no more. And basically, for reasons that are out of our control, that season is on hold indefinitely. We still hope we'll be able to pursue it in the future, but at this time we're unable to do so. So we're moving forward with other cases that need attention and search for progress there. We'll see you next time.